Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're going deep on just a single powerhouse verse, Quran 5.32.
Right.
It's often called the founding charter for the sanctity of human life. Our mission is to really understand how its ancient logic is a total takedown of modern utilitarian thinking.
It really is. And it starts with what feels like a paradoxical equation.
Okay.
The verse sets up this metaphysical equivalence where one human life, its value is structurally equal to all of mankind.
One equals infinity.
If you were to write it mathematically, yeah, it's $1 equals $52. Mm. And this isn't just, you know, flowery language. It's meant as a strict metaphysical reality.
A reality designed to just stop any calculation that says we can sacrifice a few for the many.
Precisely. For short-term gain, political stability, whatever. It forbids it.
So I'm trying to grasp that math. I mean, if one life is already infinite, how does the text even begin to deal with conflict or, you know, hard choices?
Well, that severity is the whole point. And to get it, you have to go where the verse itself begins.
The origin of violence.
The origin of violence. The story of Qabil and Hebelkain and Abel. The law is rooted right there.
Because it's a diagnosis. It wasn't about necessity, right? Not starvation or self-defense.
Yeah.
It was hasad.
Destructive envy. Yeah. The violence was internal. The text makes a point of saying Qabil's nafs, his ego, his commanding self, it just permitted the murder.
It rationalized it.
It rationalized the horror until it felt agreeable, which is this profound statement on how easily the ego can justify violence for, say, status or political expediency.
And Qabil? Abel. He's the counterweight.
He's the ethical anchor.
His refusal to retaliate, to raise a hand, that's him choosing spiritual integrity over just, you know, staying alive.
Exactly. And then the decree follows with this key phrase, min ajli dalika. On account of that.
So because of that story.
Because the human ego can rationalize murder so easily, the law that follows has to be extreme. It has to have this cosmic severity, like killing all mankind, to even work as a deterrent.
So the law's severity is a direct response to the ego's weakness. But what gives that single life its infinite weight to begin with?
Mm-hmm. The human being is seen as a theomorphic microcosm, meaning not just a biological entity, but a unique vessel, the insan kamil, or perfect human in potential, that reflects a divine reality.
So destroying one is like decreation.
It is decreation. You're wiping out a singular, irreplaceable reflection. And it's universal, too. The text uses the word nafs.
Soul.
Soul. Not a specific ethnic group. It's confirming this value applies to absolutely everyone.
Now, this prohibition is almost absolute. But the sources do point out two very narrow exceptions where the state can act.
Right.
Qisas, which is retribution for murder, and fasad filard, corruption in the land. And that second one, well, it's been a tool for authoritarians.
It has. And this is where the jurisprudence provides a really critical check on state power. Fasad primarily refers to harabat.
Indiscriminate violence against society, what we'd call terrorism today.
Exactly. Terrorism is condemned because it shatters the social contract. But, and this is so important, classical law makes a sharp distinction between a harabat and baqi.
Which is political rebellion.
Political rebellion based on a plausible cause, yeah. The harsh penalties for terrorism do not apply to political rebels. That distinction is the firewall. It's what stops the state from just calling all dissent corruption and executing its opponents.
Okay, let's bring it back to that core idea. If one life is infinite, how does that actually stop the political argument of sacrifice 10 now to save 100,000 later?
It completely dismantles the Tartarus fallacy, the human shield argument.
Because?
Because the value of one life is infinite. The value of 100,000 lives is also infinite. You can't trade infinity for infinity. It's a logical non-starter.
The ends don't justify the means.
Not when the means is the unjust killing of an innocent. Period. And this goes beyond war into, say, material calculations, too.
Like a corporation poisoning a water supply to cut costs.
That is a perfect modern example of facade. You're trading infinite human value for temporary profit. It's an act of war against society.
And the verse isn't just about forbidding killing. It also has the other side of the coin.
A demand.
And whoever saves one, it is as if he had saved mankind entirely.
Which creates an immediate proactive duty of care. Every life has that infinite value, so decisions in, say, bioethics or triage can't be based on social worth.
You mean like age or profession or economic utility?
All of that. The duty to try and save a life overrides those financial or societal judgments. Because saving that one person gives you the cosmic reward of saving everyone.
So when you put it all together, what does this all mean? It seems Quran 5.32 is... It's a cosmological mandate against ever treating human life like a commodity.
A mandate with strict, non-negotiable limits.
On both the individual ego and the power of the state.
And that leaves us with a final thought for you to carry with you. If saving one is like saving all, what does that imply about our responsibilities right now regarding deaths that are preventable?
Deaths from negligence or resource hoarding.
Sure. If we have the power through things like medicine or food security to save lives, but we don't act... Maybe because of cost, maybe just passivity. Is that inaction also a kind of cosmic crime?